Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Breakfast. Many consider it to be the most important meal of the day. Big bad chef John Currents surely does. John opened his Oxford, Mississippi restaurant, Big Bad Breakfast, in 2008. Now he's bringing his Big Bad Breakfast to the world with his latest book of the same name. John drops by to talk breakfast, and then Jennifer Weisept continues the conversation with her personal story of creating the New Orleans breakfast phenomena, the Ruby Slipper Cafe. But we all know sometimes breakfast is best eaten in the wee small hours of the morning. We're making a pre-dawn drop-in at the trolley stop, where your eggs over easy are often served with a side of irreverent humor. So rise and shine. It's breakfast time on this week's Louisiana Eats.
Hey, I'm John Currents. I'm the author of Big Bad Breakfast, the most important book of the day.
John Currents has been called many things in his life. Baker, butcher, offshore deckhand, restaurateur, James Beard Award winner, Johnny Snack, oh, and Big Bad Chef. Originally from New Orleans, over the last 16 years, John has created a multitude of successful restaurants in Oxford, Mississippi. But when he visited our Louisiana Eats studio, we sat down to talk about what he calls Big Bad Breakfast. To begin, I asked John to demystify the eternal question, is breakfast the most important meal of the day?
Sadly, there's recently been some doctoral opinions published that breakfast is not, in fact, the most important meal of the day.
Oh, no. Bad timing.
Right. Exactly. In reality, breakfast, you know, really is the most important meal of the day for an active lifestyle. The body needs fuel, after having been dormant for, on average, let's say 8 hours, of sleeping and, and probably 10 or 12 hours since having had a last meal, that kickstart to your system and a good foundation to sort of build the day on is what has made breakfast the most important meal of the day. That being said, I think today overall, we live a more sedentary lifestyle. I think, or, we don't work the cotton fields, 10 hours a day in the heat. You're not burning the kind of calories that most folks do. And so, I think the opinion now is that a good sort of solid breakfast, but not enormous, and then, a big midday meal is what nutritionists and dietitians will tell you is the best way to sort of build a day. I don't give a damn, though. I still think breakfast is the way to start every day.
Well, you certainly know how to start a fun day with a Big Bad Breakfast at your restaurant, Big Bad Breakfast. Now, why in the world did you want to open up a breakfast joint with all the other businesses you have and all the other models you've got? Why?
Well, it's really kind of funny, and as sort of the self-loathing Catholic that I consider myself, I'm sort of ashamed of the fact that I'm surrounded by good friends in the industry, like John Besh and Donald Link and Emerald and Ralph Brennan and all these guys that have been very much pioneers in different areas of the industry, and. Yeah, I've sort of always felt like, I was the guy that was sort of picking up crumbs along the way or, was sort of following trends and whatnot. I'd always wanted to open a breakfast place. And a large part of it had to do with, you know, just memories as a kid of places that we went when I was growing up. You know, I grew up in sort of the immediate aftermath of the civil rights movement in New Orleans. And while, you know, New Orleans was not nearly as segregated as, let's say, where I've spent the last 25 years of my life in Mississippi, you know, there was still issue around it. And I always found myself very interested in sort of the bump and grind that went on at the lunch counters in New Orleans, you know, because as a kid who was just fascinated with things, like you could watch all the action going on in the kitchen. And then you had places like my absolute favorite that I go back to talking about all the time was a place called All Goods on Della Chase and Britannia, which was just a magnificent little postage stamp of a place that, you know, to my mind, I always sort of compare it to the Edward Hopper's Nighthawks painting. So part of me, you know, wanted to get into something that, you know, none of my chef friends had ever considered before. You know, the opportunity to be a chef who had, you know, had received a significant amount of recognition for what he does, to jump in and take the breakfast service and treat it with the same sort of respect and sort of philosophical approach that we do lunch and dinner, make things from scratch. All from scratch, you know, have things grown specifically for us, you know, sort of push me past the fear of, like, am I just going to have to hire reprobates and criminals, you know, to work my kitchens, when I realized, like, well, that's all I was doing anyway, to work at night. I just got to get them to get out of bed in the morning.
A lot about Big Bad Breakfast for people often has to do with Big Bad Hangover. And John Besh, our mutual buddy, John, wrote your foreword. And in the foreword, he tells a very amusing story about something that you convinced him was really a salad. So what's a breakfast salad?
That's actually just sort of a Catholic's way of justifying or legitimizing drinking too many Bloody Marys in the morning. So if you put enough cocktail onions and okra and olives in it, then it's arguably a salad that's heavy on the vinaigrette. So it's, you know, it's just kind of like a dressed up olive salad. But I do want to say, in spite of the fact that we did not go back for edits on this, that John's very convenient memory of how that morning went might not be entirely accurate.
Well, you know, I have to say, I've known you for many years, and the last thing in the world that I would ever imagine you as is the Ignatius Riley of Oxford, Mississippi. And I'm curious, what is your ode to biscuits, butter, and jam that you can begin doing after you've had enough breakfast salad?
Well, you know, it's funny that I had this real sort of moment of epiphany that I swore I was going to try to write about in the book, and it was a morning where I just I woke up and I just toasted some whole wheat bread and put some soft butter on it, and then, you know, I had a little bit of, like, homemade strawberry jelly. You know, as I lifted it to take a bite, you know, like, those three aromas all hit me, those three smells hit me all at the same time. And it just, it was a Rousseauvian, you know, sort of transportation back to a, you know, a moment in my time, in my life when I was, you know, about 6 years old. And I remember, you know, that combination of smells and flavors and, you know, just how beautiful that, you know, the elemental nature of those things, you know, being combined can be. Like, how easy it is to just take slightly toasted bread and the smell of the yeast and a little bit of butter and the salt from that and the sweetness from, you know, fresh strawberry jelly. I mean, it was one of the most delicious bites of food that, you know, that I can remember having in my whole life. And I couldn't make that work on paper for some reason. You know, I knew this was one of those things that, like, I could explain it for the rest of my life, and, you know, and people would still go, great, toast and butter and jelly. Well, nice going, Ignatius.
So when we're talking about hangover helpers, first of all, what in God's name is a pylon?
So the pylon, which is the name of a Faulkner novel, which so many of the titles of the dishes on the menu at Big Bad Breakfast in Oxford are novels of different Mississippi writers. The pylon was also meant to suggest that you were just piling on ingredients. And so that was the pylon, which on the menu, we don't even describe it. I think it just says a hangover's worst enemy.
Now, I'll be honest with you, John. I read Big Bad Breakfast, and when I got to the chapter about eggs, I honestly felt like you were telling me a fairy tale. Please, for posterity's sake, what in the heck was something like an emu egg doing in the parking lot? Like, this is the craziest thing I've ever read.
Well, so I pulled up one day in the parking lot behind the restaurant, and I mean, and it had to have been 100 degrees. And I'm not kidding, like, literally I got out of my car and next to it was this egg. And it was kind of weirdly popped like a golf ball, but it was, I don't know, it was about as big as a Nerf football.
Okay.
And I don't think that the question is really as much like how an emu egg got there is what in God's name would propel you forward from that moment of picking up this unknown, you know, thing in a parking lot that you found to then actually eating it.
Well, do you catch them, like flocks of them walking through your parking lot much? I don't
no,
get this.
We still don't, to this day, don't have any idea. I know that there were a couple of emu farms in the area, but I didn't know anybody who raised them. I never, you know, they never brought me the meat. There was never the eggs around. They weren't at the farmer's market. I mean, it was totally bizarre, but we found it, we cooked it, and we ate it, and I'm pretty sure that one of the waitresses got sick in a trash can, like, watching us eat it.
Well, on that topic of eggs, I loved your recollection of when you were training, when you were learning and really getting the ropes and working for an absolutely impossible mean chef, as so many people who have been through that experience working from the ground up in kitchens have had. And even though everybody else on the staff would trade anything, beers, shifts, anything, not to have to work the omelet station at the brunch, you liked it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, it was Udo was our German sous chef at Mr. B's, and you know, and Gerard Maris was the chef, and Gerard was a chef that, you know, I desperately wanted to impress, and you know, and I think at the time that I arrived there, you know, I was young in my career, and I think he rightly identified that, you know, my being hired in as sort of a junior sous chef was beyond, you know, my experience. And he didn't cut me as wide a swath as he did most people. And so I was going to have to work to earn his respect. And as a result, like, there was no shift that was too long. There was no hour they could tell me to get there that was too early. There was no hour that they'd tell me that I needed to be there till that was too late. I would be the first person there, the last person to leave. And so I was going to do everything that I could, you know, to, one, get to the point where Udo wanted to drink a beer with me after work, and two, you know, where Chef recognized that, you know, if I didn't have the experience, that I would work my ass off till, you know, I got to the point where I earned his respect. And a chef's measure used to be based upon, you know, how well they could prepare eggs. And, you know, and for a lot of us, like, that was the test, or that's the test that you that's the test that you took, or the test that you gave to young men and women coming into your kitchen, was to cook them an omelet. And it's a daunting task because, you know, people don't do it very much anymore. I'm just, you know, I'm enough of a masochist that, you know, I wanted to be the best person at the toughest job that there was. And, you know, and I think that that's, you know, that sort of philosophy is, you know, is what propelled me forward in my career. You know, that I'll test myself at any time.
When we come back from a short break, our conversation continues with Big Bad Chef John Currents. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Ralph Brennan's Redfish Grill. From dock to pot, offering 9 varieties of fresh Gulf fish daily. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 115 Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. Now, our Big Bad Breakfast conversation continues with Big Bad Chef, John Currents. John, usually we begin, you know, we do a sound check in a certain way. We usually ask people, what did you eat for breakfast this morning?
Sadly, because I had a 4:30 departure from Oxford to get down here, I had coffee. And then on the plane down here, Glow gives you snacks on the plane. God bless them. And they have these little bitty miniature bags of Zapp's Voodoo potato chips. So I know that that's not what anybody out there in the plasma wanted to hear is a really wonderful and profound answer. Yesterday morning, I got up and I made myself an herb omelet. That I went and plucked herbs from our garden. And as I was walking back into the house, my assistant called me and asked me what I was doing. And I told her exactly that. I said I was even just uppity enough. I said, I just got done gathering some herbs from the garden to make an omelet. And she goes, I don't ever want to talk to you again.
Well, and I'm going to ask this question, too, because that was a wonderful story. And, you know, there's always a lot made with chefs about, tell me, what is your last supper? Well, John Currents, author of Big Bad Breakfast, what's your last breakfast?
My last meal would be such a weird combination. It would be with all of my friends and family. We'd eat cold fried chicken, preferably Popeye's cold fried chicken, spicy, dark meat. We'd eat oysters, fried bologna sandwiches with mayo and yellow mustard, Ashley Christensen's pimento cheese. And I would be the one that got to make fun of John Besh through the entire thing, and he wouldn't be allowed to say anything.
Well, for goodness sake, John, when you're ready to throw that party, please invite me. Thank you so much for talking with us on Louisiana Eats, and congratulations about your beautiful new book, Big Bad Breakfast.
Thank you, dear. You know I love being here.
That was James Beard Award-winning chef, John Currents.
Well, I went to see my baby last night. She started kissing me and squeezing me and holding me tight. I said, take it easy, greasy. Take it easy, greasy. Take it easy, greasy, because you got a long way to slide.
Whether you're hungry after church or looking to cure a hangover, sometimes you just want a friendly place where you can get greasy food and a cup of coffee. The Trolley Stop, a 24-hour diner in New Orleans, draws two distinct crowds interested in the same breakfast offerings, early birds and night owls. To get a better sense of the restaurant's nocturnal activities, we visited at 1 a.m., on a Saturday morning. Producers Joe Schreiner.
Could I have the sausage and eggs?
And Sarah Holtz.
And I'll have 2 scrambled eggs with rye toast, please.
Spoke with some of the characters who make up the late night crowd. Standing at about 6'5" tall, the night shift waiter Joe delivered plenty of one-liners along with the breakfast plates.
Oh, just talk about me. Oh, man, this could take forever. All right, I'm Joe. I'm the sharp waiter around here, okay? I've been around here about 3 years. still have no clue what's on half the menu. All right. And I do all the clowning in the house to start. But I make sure your food gets there the way it's supposed to. All right. We'll start there and go somewhere else later. All right. And y'all ready
for? Oh, I'm going to order everything on the menu today. She orders a burger. I'm ordering some pancakes. He's ordering Eggs Benedict. And I don't know what she's like. We're ordering everything. I don't really know what's happening. Yeah. What are you getting?
Ham and eggs.
Ham and eggs. So we got just burger. Oh my God. And we're doing the National Bell Grande with appetizer. Yes.
Well, we were out drinking. And so because it's open 24 hours, it's a good place to come to, and they have good food.
Now, we could have went to IHOP or the Waffle House, but we don't want international stuff. Like, we want something that's, like, exclusively New Orleans.
I think I'm actually going to get the chili cheese omelet.
How about you?
So, because I don't eat meat, as according to, like, 3 weeks ago, I'm going to get the seafood omelet. I'm a press. I don't know what they call that. But yeah, I'm not a vegetarian. There you go. Yes. There you go.
He wants to practice something, but obviously he doesn't know what it is. So, anyways, we enjoy the food. You will probably enjoy the food. And everybody loves the food here at Charlie Stop.
We have two eggs, scrambled with some rye toast. I've got links, rich with cheddar, rye toast, and scrambled egg. We got the jelly, we have the butter. What other condiments do you need? Okay, I'm on my 2 hour break.
Biscuit? I can make you a biscuit for $1.
I'm ready to take your order, babe.
You ready?
Oh, am I ready?
We got some things.
Are you ready?
We got some things. Okay, we're gonna do the Nachos Bel Grande for an appetizer.
The Nacho
okay?
Grande?
The Nachos Bel Grande.
Well, nacho whatever, Grande. The nacho thing. I don't know.
Hi, Sarah. I'm Adam.
And Sage.
So we produce a show. It's called Louisiana Eats.
No way. Yeah. I played with Johnny Sketch in the Dirty Notes. We did your theme song. Yeah.
We're in a band called In Business. It's a funk band, and we were playing at Old Point Bar in Algiers across the river. And we were really hungry. And this is one of the few places to have breakfast in the morning or breakfast in the night.
That part.
Have morning food in the evening or?
We actually are coming from the Kingpin. I've lived here about a year from Lake Charles, then Baton Rouge, now here. Honestly, for as many service industry people as there are in New Orleans, there aren't that many 24/7 places. And so this is one of the few places there are, so I came here. I work at Mojo Coffee Shop. So I was working till about 12:30, then I had some drinks, and then I needed some food.
Oh, I'm 10 to 6 every day. Every day, from Wednesday through Sundays. Off Mondays and Tuesdays, where I do a lot of sleeping. Especially Tuesday, you tend to just fall out Tuesday morning. Because you get off at 6 o'clock Monday, it's like, you're not going to sleep. You can try, you're not going. But by the time you go to sleep late Monday, it's late Tuesday when you wake up.
I'm sorry, but we don't
get
oatmeal this hour.
It's just ordinary, down-earth place. The only thing about overnight, we deal with more people that are tipsy than anything else. We deal with more people that don't know how to drink than anywhere else. Shucks. When I first started here, I saw more people throw up overnight in this place than I had seen in a restaurant my entire year. Yeah, they go to French Ball, they drink all those fruity drinks and stuff, and try to pop bottles like they say in the songs, the next thing you know, I've seen people go to sleep after making all kinds of noise in here. You turn around, put the order in, and they're...
We're visiting, both of us are visiting from Arkansas.
Yeah. You got your beans?
Yeah, we had some fun on Bourbon Street tonight.
We really were a little bit hungry. We needed a cheeseburger.
We were drunk too.
Yeah. Where'd you come from?
Barcadia.
You were not Barcadia. Where were you at?
Lucy's.
Lucy's. Lucy's. We were at Lucy's.
The waiting staff is really cool because, especially on the weekends, probably like on Saturday nights, it gets very, very packed. And then obviously you would have a lot of belligerent people at some point in time. And sometimes people be sitting out waiting, but they're very patient because they know that the food is good and they're going to get fueled and full and able to kind of soak up their party.
What you looking for?
My name's Aaron. I'm the night manager for the overnight shifts on the weekends. You know, you just you get people that are having a lot of fun sometimes afterwards that you don't want to ruin their good time, but you don't want them to ruin other people's good time per se. And occasionally you see one or two people like that, but for the most part, everybody in here is good-hearted people, you know. This is the best time. Between about 2:30, 3 o'clock is when we really start to get busy as the bars start to close up and, you know, they start to come in here and get good food at a good price, you know, ultimately. They usually leave pretty full, too.
Before the storm, there was 24 hours.
Okay, before the storm, they were, but when I moved here in 2012, this place was not 24 hours.
Yeah, you're right.
They closed at about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and you kind of was like, oh, man, because you love all the food. And then I would say maybe it wasn't even a year ago, right, that they started doing 24 hours. We've probably been here 4 times in the past 4 months at, like, 3 or 4 in the morning. Love it.
Well, I grew up in Jersey, so a 24-hour diner is one of the greatest things that man has ever invented. And there are not many diners down here in New Orleans, and so it's like it's kind of like a little piece of home for me. Granted, they don't offer, you know, Greek salad and New England clam chowder and a piece of pie and a milkshake and chicken parm, you know, like my diners that I'm used to. But breakfast at 4 a.m. or 2 a.m. or 11 p.m. is, you know, it's worth coming out for.
You gotta come back, I'm telling you. You gotta come back and see us.
On a pre-dawn Saturday morning at the trolley stop in New Orleans.
One night of sin is what I'm now paying for. The things I did and I saw would make me blue stand still.
How do you perfectly poach an egg? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
It makes me feel so ashamed. I've lost my sweet helping hand. I've got myself to blame.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blend beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. How do you perfectly poach an egg? The single best piece of advice I can give you is use the freshest eggs possible. The difference between poaching a grocery store egg and an egg fresh from the farmer's market is simply remarkable. If you've ever tried to poach an egg and had the frustrating experience of the white turning into inedible wisps as the yolk rolled out of the egg white and into the pan like a little ping pong ball, that was an old egg you were dealing with. If you're not sure of the egg's age, adding 2 teaspoons of white vinegar will help the whites coagulate. Begin by heating about 2 inches of water in a saucepan or sauteuse. I prefer the deep skillet of a sauteuse because it gives me more room to roll the egg around in. The water should be at a bare simmer with a few small bubbles, but not a boil. Add 1 teaspoon of salt to the simmering water and the 2 teaspoons of vinegar. Stir the water in a big circle to create a bit of a whirlpool. Crack the egg into a ramekin or teacup and slip it into the water at the center of the pan. gently nudge it over to be sure it doesn't adhere to the pan's bottom. Then add as many additional eggs as you need, one at a time. Just don't crowd them. When all of your eggs are in the pan, set the timer for 4 minutes, and then use a slotted spoon to remove the eggs in the order they were added to the pot. Place them on a piece of paper towel and gently pat them dry, then serve immediately. I'm Poppy Tooker, and a perfectly poached egg makes for some good Louisiana eats.
I'm putting all my eggs in one basket. I'm betting everything I've got on you. I'm giving all my love to one baby.
Now that you're an egg poaching pro, let's whip up the sauce that classically crowns a poached egg, hollandaise. Over time, I have seen so many crazy ways to make hollandaise. There was the terrifying need for a double boiler. Not necessary. Some folks think their blenders have to be involved. I promise you, even though a whisk is usually an essential tool in hollandaise making, I've whipped up a beautiful sauce using just a sauce pot and a dinner fork. In a saucepan, combine the juice of a lemon with one raw egg yolk. Whisk them together vigorously, then put the saucepan on a medium heat, constantly stirring to whisk the egg and lemon juice mixture together. Melt one stick of unsalted butter. As soon as your hollandaise turns a pale yellow color and reaches the thickness you desire, slowly drizzle in the hot melted butter, continuing the constant whisking. If you add the butter too quickly, you run the chance of your hollandaise sauce curdling or breaking. In case that happens, don't despair. Just whisk in a teaspoon or so of hot tap water, and magically, the sauce will go back together. Serve immediately or keep the sauce warm in that dreaded double boiler. For a copy of this recipe, visit our Louisiana Eats website at wwno.org or itsneworleans.com. Remember, without hollandaise sauce, it's just not Eggs Benedict.
Pigs in a blanket, 69 cents. Eggs roll them over in a package of Kents. Adam and Eve on a log, you can sink them damn straight. Hash browns, you know I can't be late.
My name is Jennifer Weisopt, and I'm the owner of the Ruby Slipper Cafe.
Upon their return to New Orleans mid-city from a brief exile due to Hurricane Katrina, Jennifer Weisopt and her husband Eric decided that in spite of their chosen professions as engineers, there was a shortage of breakfast diners in their neighborhood, and they could fulfill that need. It has since grown to include 6 locations in the Gulf South, specializing in breakfast and cocktails.
So the Ruby Slipper came about as a bit of a post-Katrina story. We lived in the Mid-City neighborhood, which is, you know, very central in New Orleans, and our neighborhood was devastated by floodwaters when the levee broke. And as part of our contributions to helping the neighborhood recover, we had an opportunity to open a business in the location that became the Ruby Slipper Cafe. And strangely enough, my husband Eric and I are both engineers by education and background and career. And so it was quite a different jump off into something else to go into the restaurant business. But we felt that our neighborhood needed something like a breakfast restaurant or a coffee shop that could become a hub and amenity that would cause people to choose our area of Mid-City maybe over some other areas as they were coming home or rebuilding or choosing to live in a different neighborhood when they may have lost their home somewhere else.
I've always wanted to know, why did you name the restaurant the Ruby Slipper Cafe?
That is the number one question that I get asked. So when we were developing the restaurant, again, we weren't restaurant people. We were approaching it as engineers do, and we're, you know, using our spreadsheets and coming up with what are all the things we have to do. And I was trying to come up with a name. And every name I came up with, my husband would promptly shoot down and tell me why it was not a good choice for a name. And so I had this idea for the Ruby Slipper in the back of my mind, but based off him constantly saying no to my other choices, I thought, he'll never go for this. Because I actually could envision what the logo was going to look like, and I thought, he's never going to let me put a red high-heeled shoe outside the restaurant. So where I got the idea for the Ruby Slipper was actually listening to the radio, and one of the DJs on WWOZ was talking about, this is the summer of 2006, she was talking about her daughter who had just returned from her one-year hurricane evacuation in Houston. And the night before, the teenage daughter and her friends had gotten together and were talking about where they had been for the school year, what they learned, you know, what did they like, what they did not like about that place. And her daughter said to the girlfriends that they were in Houston, and she said, what I learned is that I grew up in Oz and every place else is just Kansas. And I thought that was just the most beautiful, simple way to really describe New Orleans, because it is a colorful, quirky place full of interesting characters. And at that moment, all of us just so desperately wanted to go home. But nobody wanted to go to Kansas, where it's black and white and boring. We all wanted to go to Oz, right? Yeah. So that, to me, just really embodied the idea of why we were stepping out of our comfort zone and trying to build this restaurant.
It's really something. How long in a total space did you go from one to four?
So we basically opened one every 2 years. So the first one was May of 2008. The second one was December of 2010, which is the 200 Magazine Street. The third one was December of 2012. And then the fourth one in New Orleans was January 2014. And then we decided to take it outside the New Orleans market and see, you know, was this just a fluke and really this Katrina story, or had we gotten onto something? So we opened in Pensacola, Florida, July of 2015, and then we opened in Orange Beach, Alabama in June of 2016 this year.
My goodness.
So now we have six.
I'd love to hear, because it sounds to me like you must be an expert on why today the breakfast category seems to be exploding across the country. You lucked on to the front end of the bell curve, didn't you?
Well, so it's interesting because we always, my husband and I, we're big breakfast people. We love breakfast. And so before we owned a restaurant, we would every single weekend go all over New Orleans and the surrounding areas just to eat breakfast. And maybe that's, I grew up in New York, maybe that's my, you know, kind of leftover love of New York diners, that, you know, breakfast at any time of day, day or night. So we felt like that was a thing that was missing in the mid-city neighborhood. And so if you remember back to pre-Katrina, Betsy's is the only breakfast restaurant in the whole of mid-city. And mid-city is quite a large area. And really there wasn't even anybody serving breakfast. You know, some lunch and dinner restaurants will serve a breakfast day part as well, but really there was nothing. So we did, I feel like, I'd like to say, you know, oh, we knew it was going to be that, but we really did get lucky that the thing that we liked and we thought the neighborhood needed, you know, we were right. And the fact that, like, it's just as a restaurant day part taken off so much. But you do kind of look at and think, why did it take McDonald's and people like that? Why did they just suddenly realize that breakfast all day might be a good idea? You know? It seems like the New York diners have been onto that forever. So,
well, something that is probably uniquely New Orleanian that easily transfers to the Gulf Coast culture is it's not just breakfast all day, but it's breakfast with cocktails all day.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So let's talk about breakfast and cocktails.
Yes. So from the time we opened, we really always had a brunch concept. Now, it was a more breakfasty brunch in the beginning, and it's evolved to become a very brunchy breakfast now, I guess. It's kind of flipped itself. So much like a diner, our menu is an all-day menu. It has, you know, kind of your breakfast standards. It has your more creative and interesting brunch concepts. And it has your, you know, kind of lunch sandwiches. And you can get whichever of those things you want at whatever time of day that we're open. But none of those would be complete without cocktails. And so when we originally opened, we started with, you know, one mimosa, one Bloody Mary, and one Brandy Milk Punch. Those were our three in-house cocktails. And literally, if you go to the original restaurant in Mid-City, you'll see that it has, you know, the world's smallest bar that was never intended to serve the volumes of cocktails that it serves. So originally, it was just three things that they were stocking in the bar. And it's grown quite a bit to the capacity that we can manage with that location being our limiting factor, because they just don't have the bar space to do a full bar or much, you know, beyond that. But now, you know, fast forward to 8 years later, we have five mimosas, we have three different Bloody Marys, and then we have several other cocktails that we do as well.
How do you find other people reacting to the concept of breakfast cocktails?
I think it is a bit of a unique thing to New Orleans, but New Orleans has become so ingrained in the rest of the country's culture. I think, you know, we're spreading that love of, you know, there's always whatever time of day it is, there's something you can drink to go with it. So, but I definitely feel like we in New Orleans, we've taken it to a different level.
Have you ever had any shock tourists?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. You know, the people who they'll see that section of the menu and kind of glare at it like, who drinks this? You know, it's 8 a.m. and who drinks this? And so one of the you know, we have a lot of different T-shirts and stuff, and I should have brought you one. Our newest T-shirt design that we rolled out this summer when we opened our Orange Beach location has kind of hand sketches of our main cocktails. So it has a Bloody Mary and a mimosa and a Brandy Milk Punch on the back of it in kind of a beach scene, kind of reminiscent of a Jimmy Buffett cartoon, you know, that style of art. And it says it's 7 a.m. somewhere, because we open at 7 a.m. at the Ruby Slipper. And so it's just a play on that concept of it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Well, for us, it's 7 a.m., and we think 7 a.m. is a good time to start drinking, especially if you're on vacation. We don't recommend you drink and drive. We don't recommend that you, you know, drink and go to school or show up at your office. But I will tell you that particularly in our downtown locations, we do have quite a few regulars who come in and order mimosas and have us put them in coffee to go cups and go to work. So that might be a bit unique to New Orleans.
Ooh, the dirty little secrets. The dirty little secrets.
So when you see somebody with a Ruby Slipper coffee cup, it might not have coffee in it.
Your menu has some very unusual items. If someone were to dine for the first time at a Ruby Slipper Cafe, what might surprise them that's on the menu?
I think the one that surprises people the most is just some of our Benedicts, because they're fairly unique. So, for instance, a couple that we've added within the past year, we have a hot smoked salmon Benedict that we serve with a dill hollandaise, flash fried capers, and minced red onion. And we have another is a shrimp boogaloo, which is kind of a shrimp that we cook in a Cubillon sauce. And so it has all those really traditional Creole flavors in them. And I think a lot of people don't think fish for breakfast or seafood for breakfast. And so the number of seafood items that we have, I think, is probably the one that we get the most surprise over. But once people try it, they kind of scratch their heads and say, why didn't I ever eat this fish for breakfast before? It's really good.
Yum. You're making me hungry. Jennifer, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us on Louisiana Eats. Let's have breakfast sometime soon.
And cocktails, of course.
Of course. Thanks, Jennifer. Jennifer Weisept of the Ruby Slipper Cafe.
Là-bas, prenez lentement l'arc-en-ciel, pareil à notre amour ardent et presque irréel.
Savory or sweet, crepes are a delightful indulgence, suitable for eating any time of the day.
If you've ever found yourself in the French Market, you may have come across the crepe cart, which offers authentic versions of the classic French dish. Owners and operators Tracy Kish and Samantha Salater managed to take a break from feeding the hungry masses to tell us about their magical cart.
Hi, I'm Samantha.
And I'm Tracy.
And we're the co-owners of the crepe cart at the French Market.
We make crepes in the traditional French style from push cart that we designed with the fun of the city in mind.
We tried to make it like old world style with big wagon wheels and kind of a European paint job because we wanted to bring back some of the authentic street food vibe to the city.
We met while we were working at the late shift at a high profile creperie. So we perfected our art in crepe making over the years, and we realized that it would be brilliant to have a cart because that's how they were originally served.
It was like really high volume, so there's like a lot of demand to get as fast and efficient as possible at making crepes. And then we also did catering where we had to pull out a lot of tents and tables, and so we wanted to kind of streamline the process.
We have grill plates that we imported from France, because if you're going to do crepes, you have to get a real crepe grill from Europe. So you take the batter and you pour it in the center of the grill plate, and you use a wooden paddle kind of thing to spread it in a circle as thin as you can, and then you'll fold it and flip it to make it into a triangle.
We try to have something for everybody, so we make sweet and savory and vegan and gluten-free crepes. Some of the most popular savory ones are the SBT, which is spinach, bacon, and tomato, or our Caprese, which is tomato, basil, and mozzarella. The most popular sweet is probably banana Nutella.
A lot of American people are a little confused about crepes because a lot of people learn about crepes from places like IHOP. But the way we do it is they're like a nice golden brown, and they hold up to themselves. So you can walk around with one and just kind of nibble on it as you go, like you would, I don't know, a burrito. One of my proudest moments was we had an older couple come up and they ordered a crepe Suzette. And that's like the most traditional crepe there is. And they told us, while we were making it, they told us that they owned a creperie in France.
Oh, wow.
And so the pressure was on, and we were really nervous about it. And they ate, I think they got a caprese too, actually. And they ate, and they came back, and they said, that was great.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yes, we passed the French test.
The true test, yeah.
Tracy Kish and Samantha Salater at their French Market crepe cart.
Wake up your sleepy head, put on some clothes, shake up your bed, put another log on the fire for me, I made some breakfast and coffee.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll explore Ignatius Riley and a Confederacy of Dunces from a food lover's point of view.
I am at the moment writing a lengthy indictment against our century. When my brain begins to reel from my literary labors, I make an occasional cheese dip.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, and with support from Dickie Brennan Steakhouse, a local New Orleans steakhouse serving prime beef in New Orleans French Quarter. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.